Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. On a Tuesday to Monday night football games, live in Los Angeles, this is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. 1 hour from now, for the first time this year, I have my Herd hierarchy, and I honestly believe all 10 teams feel like playoff teams. This year we get 14. You know, it's first couple of weeks, you're not quite sure. I feel like all the teams I have seen so far in my Herd hierarchy are all playoff teams, even teams that historically do not get to the playoffs. It's great to have you in. Joy Taylor, how are you?
I'm great. Double football last night?
It was nice. Wife's out of town for a while, so no coasters. Had a Corona.
Are you leaving the cupboard doors open, the cabinet doors open?
DoorDash. Just had a big old fat burger and just enjoyed the heck out of myself watching football last night.
It's a decent night.
We got baseball playoffs, Heat, NBA, Lakers tonight, so it's a great, great Tuesday night of sports. Let me start with this. You know, in the Brady-Belichick divorce, we talked a lot about there. Who's going to win? Who's going to win? But the truth is, this morning, Brady and the Buccaneers are really good, and Belichick, when he has Cam, they're really good. They both won. They both deserve credit for the dynasty. Shaq and Kobe, they both won without each other. They won more with each other. They both deserve credit. Andy Reid in Philadelphia, both have won Super Bowls when they broke up. Philadelphia's structure was good for Andy, and Andy was good for Kansas City and Philadelphia. You can spread it around. Generally speaking, if you have a healthy, successful relationship, both people deserve credit. Then there's those lopsided marriages. She's a winner, he's a loser. They break up, he goes down the tube, she flourishes, moves on, and marries somebody equally successful. Right now, Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy's divorce, it's lopsided. Aaron looks unbelievable. He's now 17-3 without McCarthy. He's embracing Matt LaFleur. They've developed, it's called a running game. Meanwhile, in Dallas, Mike McCarthy made a horrendous choice as defensive coordinator and journeyman hack Mike Nolan. They no longer run the football, even though they have one of the best running backs, and they look disjointed. In four games, they're 1-3. The Packers are a top 3-4 NFL team. Dallas is a bottom 3 or 4 defense, or worse. It has been decided. Aaron won this divorce. Last night, he didn't have two of his top 3 receivers. They had 3 running backs on the field at the same time. It was a perfect opportunity. Even Vegas thought, this is going to be close, and it wasn't. He found tight ends. They're more multiple. There's more movement. They've developed a running game. He doesn't even need his best offensive weapon, Devontae Adams, to be on the field. Aaron Rodgers this year, 13 touchdowns, no picks. And I know. It's the year of bad defense, but those are remarkable numbers. He's got his highest passer rating ever through 4 games. He has the most touchdowns through 4 games. He's been sacked the fewest times through 4 games. Everything's gotten better since McCarthy left. Protection, the running game, the multiple variable looks, the happiness of Aaron Rodgers. There's nothing else to say. It's over. And Dallas right now is a mess. They're a mess because of McCarthy's hires. What defines Dallas's offense right now? They start real slow, and they don't run the football, and Dak has to play catch-up late. That's on the coach. If you come out week after week and you start slowly, that's on the coach, not the quarterback. Dak is more than capable. I've seen Dak's career. He's had many years in which he starts quick. That was more Jason Garrett. They didn't finish well with Garrett, but they often started and had leads. This offense in Dallas is trailing, is reeling, and you're asking Dak to catch up, which is really a bad way to do it with Dallas. You should, to ensure that you give Zeke 18 to 25 carries, you should really deeply care about how you start in Dallas, because this is a team, Dallas, that could be built to hold on to leads. Pound Zeke. Dak is mobile. He can be a pain in the butt to defend if you have running plays designed for him. Instead, they're the opposite. They're always trailing, meaning you take Zeke out of games. I don't think Dak's one of the great natural throwers in the NFL, especially when you drop 7 into coverage. So it's been decided. And if you listen to Aaron Rodgers after the game, he's not shy about giving his new coach lots of credit. Listen.
Yeah, I like where we're at. I really do. I like the kind of diversity in our approach. I think, again, Matt was really good kind of the mix up tonight with the calls. Obviously, we had to do some different things without Devontae and without Allen and without Mercedes. But I thought, we had a nice plan, and then we executed really well.
Nice plan. Execution was good. Had to dial up some new stuff. We were innovative. That's just all saying, I like my new coach. That is 25 seconds of saying, I really, really like how this divorce has turned out. I upgraded, and the Cowboys did not. The question for Dallas now is, all good businesses move off problems the minute they see him. Will Dallas move off Mike Nolan quickly, not be rigid, embrace it, and try to convince themselves they got it right? Because you cannot look at Aaron Rodgers this morning. And I've been a critic of Aaron. I know he's great. I'd vote him for the Hall of Fame. I've always said I like him more than Favre. Aaron thinks I don't like him. I do, but I've been willing to be critical and been right when I've been critical. But if you're watching him now, he has taken tight ends you've never heard of. The protection's better. He's happier. And yes, you got to sometimes make your quarterback happy. It's Pete Carroll's job to make Russell Wilson feel fulfilled. It's when you get Patrick Mahomes and Lamar and Aaron and now Josh Allen and you get these young quarterbacks. Aaron's still pretty young, right? Like, you got to make sure they're happy. It's okay. You know, that doesn't mean everything is built perfectly for Aaron Rodgers, but you can't frustrate him. And when McCarthy there, he was throwing the ball away, eye rolling. Reports now he would literally take the play, roll his eyes on McCarthy. You're watching Aaron now embracing, adapting. He's challenged. Everything's better. Protection, routes, motion, multiples, running game, a total indictment of Mike McCarthy in Dallas. Let's shift to Kansas City, New England. This was not supposed to be even competitive. Sometimes your value at work, for all you young millennials, right? You're trying to find your footing. Uncle Colin's going to give you one small, tiny piece of advice. You certainly don't have to take it. I mean, it'll probably fulfill your life, but if you don't want to listen, fine. But sometimes your value at work is when you don't show up and everybody realizes, oh, crap, she's really good. She took the day off. We're not the same. Oh, my God, we really miss him. Despite Belichick's genius, a wonderful game plan against Patrick Mahomes, didn't even get officiating breaks. His genius into the toilet because of lousy quarterback play. Make no mistake, New England wins that game last night with Cam Newton. They win that football game with Cam Newton. Cam Newton's value was not playing. Now, we all knew, I admit it, it's better than I thought. But you watched that game last night, two different moments. You're like, oh, this would be a nightmare. Mahomes is on the sideline. Because that Belichick and that defense, those are Super Bowl teams. That's a Super Bowl coach and a Super Bowl defense. Boy, Cam took the night off. Wow, is he valuable. I mean, if you're watching that, my takeaway on that game last night, if I'm Kansas City, I don't want to play New England with Cam. I got no interest. I got no interest playing New England with Cam. Belichick in Cleveland, fired. He couldn't get the right quarterback. Pete Carroll in Seattle, 14-18 when he didn't have Russell Wilson. By the way, Kyle Shanahan is largely regarded as the genius offensive coach. Let's see his record without Jimmy Garoppolo. Oh, it's 5-21. He lost to Carson Wentz Monday at home, and he was throwing to deck chairs. Does everybody get it now? The value of quarterback. Quarterbacks can win without a superstar coach. You may not win Super Bowl. You can win. Belichick can't win in Cleveland, in New England. Unless, now you say Matt Castle. Remember, that team was 18-0 the year before. It was the most talented team in football by a mile. But you start looking around this league, and I said this with Jim Harbaugh. Everybody banged on Jim Harbaugh. Don't just judge somebody by when they leave a place if they succeed at the next place. Jim Harbaugh made Michigan football better. What happened to the Niners when he left? Capsize, man overboard. Jim Harbaugh's a good football coach. Not just because he's made Michigan significantly better, and they're back to being a 9-10 win team, and that's very good at Michigan. They're not going to beat Clemson, Alabama. They're not as good a program. They're not going to beat Ohio State. But what happened to San Francisco when he left? There you go. So I thought Cam Newton last night got himself a big fat contract. The value of Cam not going to work is it's indisputable. And by the way, when I picked the Patriots to go enjoy as my witness, I said they're going to go 5-11, 6-10. You all laughed at me, and I kept saying, "You think he can win with Jarrett Stidham? You think he can win with Brian Hoyer? You just watched them last night with those guys. They had the better game plan." And then Cam came in, and I made a mistake, and I thought oil, water won't work. I'm wrong. They're both playing complementary football. But the value of Cam last night was sensational. I just sat and watched that game, and I'm like, if I'm Andy Reid, I got no interest playing New England again with Cam Newton. None.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I talked to a friend not long ago. His name is Peter Chernin. He's a very successful guy, done very well in his life. And I said, like, we were just talking about business, and I said, give me one nugget. I can't remember two or three. Give me one nugget if you started a business to remember. And he said, if something isn't working, move off it. Just don't fall in love with your initial idea for a business. Amazon at one point just sold books online. They pivoted. Netflix sold DVDs. They pivoted. Two of the fastest growing stocks in the world over the last 5 years. Like, you have an idea, you hire some people, and all of a sudden, 6 months into the business, you're like, that doesn't work. This really works. You pivot. Don't let your ego get in the way with it. Dallas Cowboys are letting their ego get in the way with it. They hired Mike Nolan, defensive coordinator. Mistake. Bad hire. They're doubling down. Stephen Jones, Jerry's son, says, we are this close to making it work.
I just think that we're not as far away as it seems, but we do have a lot of work to do, and we're very confident in this football team. In spite of what we've seen in the first four games, we really believe we've got a great head coach, a great staff, and a great group of players that'll get the job done.
There is nothing to indicate any of that is true. Hire slow and fire fast when you see a problem. Mike Nolan needs to go, and I'm not a guy that has ever talked about firing coaches. I don't do it on this show. Brady Hoke at Michigan, I said time to fire him. That's rare. I'm not a big fire guy. I'll support Bill O'Brien later in the show. I'm not a big fire guy. I don't want to see. I think chaos is the number one problem with bad businesses. Like, you keep firing people after a while. Jets, Cleveland Browns, the good candidates don't want to be part of your operation. But hire slow. Take your time to hire, but fire fast if you've hired poorly. Mike Nolan's a mess. What does Jerry need to see? What does Mike McCarthy, Stephen Jones need to see? Somebody drop 50? The Cleveland Browns got the edge every time they wanted it Sunday. DeMarcus Ware, after the game, said, quote, we're soft, unquote. DeMarcus Lawrence, excuse me. Jalen Smith is ranked 44th best linebacker in the NFL, according to Pro Football Focus. You really think he's the 44th most talented linebacker, or it's the schemes? Multiple blown coverages. Players complaining it's too complicated. A lack of effort on that reverse. It's like players quit playing. What do you need to see? You got to make a move on this, because you're going to talk yourself into Mike Nolan over the next 3 weeks, because you play the Giants' dreadful offense, Arizona's penalty-plagued team and weaker defense, and Washington's anemic offense. And you're going to talk yourself into, oh, he really slowed the Giants and Washington down. Then it gets tougher again. This defense against Aaron Rodgers, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Derek Carr, Russell Wilson, this is bad. Hire slowly, fire quickly if you've made a mistake. Pivot quickly, get the right guy. And I'm not a talk show host that ever talks about firing people. It is bad. You don't have to be a football coach to see poorly designed schemes. You don't have to be a football coach to go, wow, Andy Reid's clever. You know, Bill Belichick really knows his defense. You don't have to be a whiz. I don't have to understand math, but if you go to the chalkboard and you're a genius, I can figure out within 90 seconds, that guy knows his math. This coach, Mike Nolan, is outdated, and this is not working. Jerry Jones is doubling down on it.
Conversation or thoughts about Mike Nolan's job status?
No,
If you think about it at this juncture, that's not something that you would go to. We're getting the benefit of a coach that has a lot of experience. He has answers there. Can they be answers that we all get on the page with? That's the issue. That's the challenge of how to execute it when it's in live action. But we've got somebody here that can tell you where we're apt, where we're inapt, where we need changes as well as anybody on the planet, and Mike.
All right, good luck with that.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So, like, I understand everybody loving Patrick Mahomes. His family thought I was slow to embrace him. No, I wasn't. I'm not. Patrick's great. I love him. I think he's a great representation for the league. I think he's a wonderful kid. I really like him. But I do. The media tends to be younger now than it's ever been because it's young media means cheap media and it's more corporatized than ever. And they just fall in love with the newest player and the flash. And that Russell Wilson is better than Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes is flashier. Patrick Mahomes has a better offensive coach, significantly better tight end, the fastest guy in the league at wide receiver, and a better offensive line. But how do I know he's better? Because the best coach in the NFL and the best defensive coach ever is Bill Belichick. Belichick cannot stop Russell Wilson. Faced him four times. Can't stop him. Russell's had one bad play against him. Just happened to be in a Super Bowl. Belichick's had all sorts of success against Mahomes. Both Mahomes and Russell Wilson have played Belichick this year. Okay, you watch the game. Russell Wilson carved him up. Not only five touchdowns, but he was throwing the ball over the top. These were big plays against Belichick's great defense, which never gives up big plays. When you watch this game, Russell against New England, nobody does this to New England. Nobody beats them over the top. You can slowly get yards on New England. They're the classic bend but don't break. Nobody beats them down the field like this, except Russell Wilson in the last 4 and 5 years. All of them are over the top throws. And again, this is what Belichick takes away from Josh Allen, Sam Darnold, Patrick Mahomes. He doesn't give those up. Mahomes last night had a couple of touchdown passes. Jet sweeps. jet sweep. They don't even count as throws downfield. Mahomes struggled against him. And in fact, Mahomes has struggled the four times he's faced Belichick. Last night, AFC Championship game. Last year, he didn't score in that AFC Championship game in the first half. In fact, Mahomes against Belichick in four games in the first half, one touchdown, three picks, 58% completion percentage, and a 72 passer rating. That's a problem. And that's with a better offensive line easily than Russell Wilson. Much better tight end play. Much better wide receivers. And a brilliant offensive coach in Andy Reid. Mahomes struggles against Belichick in all four games early. He's off. He can't quite catch it. Then he goes in with Andy Reid at half, make a few adjustments, and then he comes back and some he wins, some he loses. But when you watch those two go up against Bill Belichick, Russell comes into the game and Bill's got no answers. And he's going deep down and he beats Belichick the way nobody beats him. He goes right after Gilmore. He goes right over the top. That's the solution that nobody has for New England. This year, Russell, five TDs and a pick, 75% completion, 132 passer rating. With a defensive coach that we have criticized on this show, and so has Warren Sharp, so have the analytic mavens, saying, you know, Seattle really has a little bit of an outdated offense. Doesn't matter. Belichick can't stop it with Russell Wilson. Can't stop it. Wave the white flag. Give up. Can't stop it. Not saying Mahomes doesn't have more raw quarterback talent, isn't flashier, isn't great. But this minute in the NFL, if you're counting pre-snap, if you're counting playmaking, deep throw accuracy, experience, not getting hit, manipulating defenders, manipulating coverages, Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the league, and he's the best football player in America, therefore in the world. Now, again, Josh Allen may have a better skill set. 6'6", rocket arm. Mahomes and Josh Allen, they're kind of like, you look at him and you're like, oh yeah, that's a silly arm. Like, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes don't throw the ball like anybody else on the planet. It's just a laser beam. The other day, Josh Allen made a throw against the Raiders to Cole Beasley. It was a missile. It was like Mahomes is the only guy in the league, maybe Aaron Rodgers, that makes that throw with that velocity. That's just not, and Russell doesn't do that. Russell's more the touch. You know, Russell's running around, keeping his eyes downfield. But look at what Belichick does against Mahomes early in games. He fools him, flummoxes him, drives him nuts. That's with Andy Reid. He can't do anything against Russell Wilson. In fact, Russell dictates terms. Russell goes, no, I'm going to go at Stephon Gilmore, and I'm going to go right at the thing that you never allow, deep balls. It's the only quarterback in the league. Bill, I'm going to go at your best corner. I'm going to go at the thing you never, I'm going to go right at you. And Belichick's playing defense. Belichick's on offense against Mahomes. He's making Patrick Mahomes uncomfortable. Russell Wilson makes Belichick uncomfortable. That is the difference.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app. Herd Hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to Colin. Number 10.
I'm going to go Cleveland Browns, number 10, over Tennessee because I think they're more explosive offensively. 30-plus points in three straight games. Only team to average 200 yards rushing per game this year. Most rushing touchdowns in the NFL with 8. Their defense, though I think it can be susceptible to the big play on the back end, has the most turnovers with 10. I think if you're in Cleveland, Kevin Stefanski feels like finally a grown-up, a teacher in the room for Baker Mayfield. I think Cleveland's a playoff team. That's what we predicted. I have them at 10.
Number 9.
The Colts. Now, they play this weekend, and I like the Colts to win. That's why I put them at 9. Their offense is not as explosive. Phillip Rivers exactly one touchdown pass in each of the games. But their defense is the best in the league right now. Number 1 in everything. Points, yards, third down, passing yards. Only team to allow fewer than 300 total yards in all four games this year. Again, a limited offense, but I think they beat Cleveland. If I'm wrong, I'll flip-flop them.
Number 8.
Steelers. Listen, they've beaten bad teams. That's what worries me. Giants, Broncos, Texans are a combined 0-9. But it's hard to run on them. You can't deny their front seven personnel is out of this world good, and Tomlin's a defensive coach. Plus, they have Minkah Fitzpatrick behind that. One of 5 teams to average 25 points a game and fewer than 20. They've played bad teams. They are back. I don't know how high the ceiling is, but I'll put them at 8.
Number 7.
But I think Buffalo would beat them on a neutral field, so I have the Bills at 7. I love their coaching. I like their defense. Doesn't quite feel as ferocious as last year, but Josh Allen is the story. 15 touchdowns, 1 pick this season. Stephon Diggs has added a deep threat element they did not have. 3 games with a completion percentage of 70% or more. He looks like a baby Big Ben, but even more athletic. I really like Buffalo. They feel like a team capable, barring injuries, of doing all the things you need to do. Well coached, don't turn it over, good run defense, and an explosive dynamic at wide receiver.
Number 6.
Seattle. I don't know if Seattle is 6. I'm just putting them up there because of Russell Wilson. There's so much about Seattle I don't like. They have no pass rush. Their defense, they bat on the back end, but they hit. They've got some playmakers, and Russell Wilson is insane right now. He is the best player in the world. Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes, they can argue for number 2. I put them at 6 because I thought they'd beat Buffalo in a neutral field because of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. I think Buffalo's more complete. But there's, again, Russell Wilson's playing right now at a level that you just don't see. Tom Brady's best year, he wasn't this because he didn't have the escapability. Seattle at 6.
Number 5.
Tampa Bay. This is interesting. Brady has increased his passer rating in each game. Brady's offense, total yardage, increased in every game. We knew the defense would be good. It's second best in the NFL against the run. But I like that Brady has now, it took him a month, he has found his guy. It's Mike Evans. So Brady has Leonard Fournette, and they're doing it, by the way, without Chris Godwin, and Leonard Fournette just got there and has been injured. This offense, O.J. Howard is out now for the year. I know that's bad news, but now they still have 2 really good tight ends, but I like they're getting better each week, and he has found Mike Evans as his go-to receiver.
Number 4.
Let's not sell all of our stock on Baltimore. I'm going to have them at number 4 because they're the only team in the league. 27 straight games rushing over 100 yards. Lamar Jackson is still really good. Am I concerned they're 0-10 when trailing at halftime in the last 2 years? Yes. That is something. It's not good. I think Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes and certain quarterbacks are better when trailing. But, you know, they got the Bengals coming up at Philadelphia. They're going to post some more wins here. I think we'll really know more about them. They face the Steelers in Week 7, at the Colts Week 9, at the Patriots Week 10. This is still a championship-level football team that just frankly doesn't match up with Kansas City very well, and who does?
Number 3.
New England. They win that game with Cam Newton. I'm not going to punish them for last night because Cam Newton's coming back according to stories this morning. Folks, best right now, only team to hold the Chiefs without a touchdown in the first half in the Mahomes era, they've done it 3 times. This is a real football team. They just need Cam. I also would love if they went out and got a deep threat, but I'm not going to punish them. Their upcoming schedule's got a lot of wins, Broncos, Jets. I just think they're really good with Cam. Their defense has 8 takeaways, that's second most. And again, they have not played bad teams. They have played Seattle. They have played Kansas City. They're playing real football teams. I have them at 3.
Number 2.
But Green Bay's win last night, missing their top 2 wide receivers, was the most impressive they had been. Again, the protection is excellent right now. Aaron's comfortable. He's got a running game. He's got time to throw. He's got multiple tight end and wide receiving targets. Aaron's got 13 TDs, no picks. They also have the best point differential in the NFL at 51. And through the years, there's 2 things that generally matter in the NFL playoffs. What are you averaging yards per play? That matters because it means you're explosive. And what's your point differential? Baltimore's was huge last year. Those are things that matter as the seasons go on. Really great teams blow about 7 teams out over the course of the season. That's what the Niners in Kansas City and Baltimore did last year. Packers number 1 in the NFL in point differential. It matters.
Number 1.
Kansas City, but I don't think it is by much as I thought a couple of weeks ago. I think Cam in New England would have beaten them last night. I think Aaron Rodgers could beat them. Baltimore doesn't match up well, but I think if Seattle's O-line is not as bad as I think, they could maybe run the football on them. I'm going to give them the number 1 team, but I don't think they're quite as dominating as I thought 2 weeks ago.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So it's a Tuesday in the NFL. You heal a little bit. If you're 3-1 or 4-0, you feel great right now. And the Rams last year, we said this in the offseason, everybody kind of bailed on the Rams, but they were 9-7 in a great division. You would hope that's your down year. They had an ugly win over the Giants Sunday, but it puts them at 3-1. They've got to feel good about where they're at, and their Pro Bowl left tackle, Andrew Whitworth, is now joining us. The bed behind him is made. He understands, making the peeps and your wife's happy. I can tell you that on television, the bed's made.
That's it. As long as she's happy, I'm good. We're 3-1 and the wife's happy. I can't be doing much better right now.
You were telling me during the break when we talked that you thought Sunday was going to be ugly. McVay talked about it. Why did you know it was going to look like it did?
Well, I think you really look at the Giants. They've played physical football in their first 3 games leading up to ours, and we're really in every game and had an opportunity, you know, up to the half, really, even against the Niners, and just continued to turn the football over multiple times in each one of those games. But defensively, they've kept themselves in it. They've made you have to fight and claw for yardage in the running game and find a way to beat them in the passing game. And so I think we knew it was going to be that kind of game. I don't think we thought it'd be as hard as it was going into the fourth quarter. But you know what? We found a way to have the drive you need to win. And at this time of year and as football seasons go, you know, they don't count how you made the birdie. They only count that you made it. So yeah, you got the W and you move on.
So I'm going to ask you a question that I don't know an answer to, and I don't think most of our fans do, because most of us didn't play football at a high level. The Rams are the second best team after half in the NFL, and I tend to think the difference between good coaches and great are adjustments. But you only have 15 minutes. You walk in there, you're down to about 13. So clearly, Sean and you guys are a very good team post-half. You have very limited time. What kind of adjustments are possible to make, Andrew, at half?
Well, I think really more for Sean and the staff, it's more about what they kind of thought they'd expect they'd see early in this season. You really look at it. We've played a couple teams, Philly really being the only exception, that we really didn't have any clue what they're going to play and how they play. And, you know, you look at Dallas with Mike Nolan, didn't have really any clue what he was going to do front wise or what defense, you know, if he's been influenced by lately would kind of dictate how they played. And I think, you know, Buffalo is one of those teams. It's the first time we've really played them and since we've been together. So I think that, you know, with us this week, we kind of knew the Giants had kind of changed up what they'd done a little bit in each game. And we knew there'd be some strategy there to understand it. Okay, this is how they want to play, so this is how we'll play in the second half. And I think that's one of the things we've done really well this season is guys have just stuck with the plan, waited to hear what the attack method is, and then go out and execute it.
You would think this goes – what I'm about to say is the opposite of what you'd think. You would think as an offensive lineman that run blocking is you're getting your hands dirty, you're rolling on the turf, it's like wrestling with a helmet, and you're like, oh, that's no fun. Pass blocking would be great. You couple steps back, you push a guy off to the left. But you guys are really a power running team, and I've talked to offensive linemen through the years, and they're like, no, actually, I'd rather put a hat on somebody and drive him. I hate dropping back because if I make one mistake, I'm on television as the lousy offensive lineman that can't block. So for you, you're a rushing team. You have good receivers, but would you rather run it 51 or pass it 51?
That depends on who I'm facing, Colin. You know what? If I get the right defensive end, I don't mind throwing it 51 times. But, no, I think any O-lineman would rather run it 51 times. There's a lot less pressure in the sense of in the passing game, there's so many factors that can affect whether the play's good or not. The coverage that's run, really, who you're facing, how good their rush is, all those things. But in the running game, it's like, hey, you can make an effort and just move somebody out of the way, and the other blocks can be okay. And if the running back hits it, you've got an opportunity to have success. So I think you just kind of feel like you can be more aggressive. You can really go after it, and one really great block can dictate the run. And so I think that's why, as linemen, you get excited just to have an opportunity to fire off and make that impact in the running game.
So you're playing with no fans. I really noticed it this Sunday. I was watching a Raiders-Buffalo game. And a guy made a great catch for the Bills. And I thought, God, he doesn't even get an ovation. I mean, it was just such a beautiful play. And I thought, if I'm an offensive guy, I just love you make the catch, you come up, and it's like, oh, there's nobody in the fan stands. Is it odd? I mean, you played at LSU, craziest fans in college football. Has it been a little different? I mean, you got more people at practice last year.
Yeah, it's been strange. I'm not going to lie. Especially some of these road games, just going on a road game, your expectation in the NFL is just the energy, the force that's going to be against you, how loud it's going to be, all those things. And to walk into some of these stadiums and then realize, like, wow, this thing's completely empty. And the only thing in there is just some streaming music. It's definitely just such a strange – every game you have one point of the game where you kind of go, where in the world am I right now? What are we doing? At some point, just in a TV timeout on the sideline or something, just because it just doesn't feel like it's real. It almost feels like you're in the middle of a dream in a couple some of these game scenarios. And so it really can see that it takes a locked-in focus for a lot of these teams to have their own energy, their own passion, and your sideline is even more important than ever. Those guys having that energy and that passion and be able to get it up for guys that are on the football field.
You know, it's interesting. McVay comes into the league 3 years ago, and he really went out there. He doesn't like to play starters in preseason. There's less hitting in practice. And, you know, it was new. I saw a lot when Chip Kelly was at Oregon. He was doing stuff that had never been done. He wanted 5:45 a.m. practices. He felt that athletes were better served in the morning than in the afternoon when our, you know, body rhythms slow down. And Sean kind of went against the grain. I'm not playing starters preseason. Let's have less hitting in practice. So you've been with this system now multiple years with Sean. Do you think it's beneficial? Let's take a big macro look on the way Sean coaches. Has he tweaked it at all?
I think that I would say this year has been more physical and more of a physical challenge. Like when we practiced, we really had an intent on it being physical and the practices being intense that way in the limited time we had. But I think really for him, it's less about all the sports science and what time you practice and all that kind of mess against the grain. His against the grain is more anything we do, we're going to do it at an extreme level of efficiency and intensity. And if we're not doing that, then we're not doing it. We're not doing any monotonous, just, hey, let's do this just because, you know, for 20 years they said you should walk through at this time on a Saturday. I mean, we don't do any of that kind of stuff. And so it's really about our walkthroughs for an hour before practice every single day are just as intense, just as alert. The efficiency has to be at the same exact standard that we run a full speed play. And so it's just you, when you're doing something, you're doing it at a level that you feel like you're in the middle of a game. And that's the expectation from him and how it should be executed, how every block should look. It doesn't matter if we're stepping through it or running full speed. And so I feel like what we do is maybe reduced to some teams, but the efficiency level is extremely high.
Finally, Andrew, no preseason. And so now you're through week four. People have told me in the league forever, you need about 3 weeks of hitting, real game hitting. That's why preseason matters. Now that you've played your whole career with a preseason and 1 year without it, this morning, if I asked you, what do we do with preseason in the NFL, Andrew Whitworth? What do we do? What would be your answer?
Well, as a 15-year vet, I would say never do preseason again. But, you know, I would say that, honestly, I do see that there's some value for the back end of your roster for your young guys to get a chance to have a live snap before the real thing happens. I think that that can be done in a controlled scrimmage setting, too. But, you know, scrimmaging other teams like we have done with Sean the last few years, that's been a big MO of ours. But I think, honestly, if you reduced it at least to two, maybe one, just to give a game where the young guys can get out there and compete a little and you might could see what you had. I don't think that there's a big need for preseason. I really just don't think it matters. And I think it's more something that maybe in the old system and how the league was, maybe it was efficient, maybe it wasn't. But I think nowadays, really, honestly, college football does it every single season. You know, there's no reason you can't prepare efficiently 6 weeks and be ready to go if you practice methodically and have a plan for how you're going to get guys developed physically and ready to go. I mean, I think we've seen that with our group over the last few years and having not played any preseason snaps together. And I think it hasn't affected us at all.
It's great talking to you. 3-1, Rams at Washington, Sunday early game. That can be a trap game. They are really physical up front, really super physical up front. So good luck to you and the Rams traveling out west, Andrew. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it.